They talked over all these matters, and on the same day got a good piece on in the direction of the Bitter Lakes. But when it began to grow dark, they chose a camping ground for the night, a pleasant, convenient spot, half surrounded by lime cliffs, from which in one place a crooked palm tree grew out and then straightened itself to make a shade. There was a well and a shelter hut, and the blackened earth showed that other people had camped here and made fire. The locality has a further role to play in the rest of the story. We shall know it again by the palm tree, the well, and the hut. The nine brothers made themselves comfortable there. Some unloaded the asses and put the packs together. Others drew water and piled branches for a fire. But one of them, Issachar, at once set about feeding his animal, for his nickname of the Bony Ass gave him special sympathy with the wants of his beast, and the animal had several times brayed piteously for its food. The son of Leah opened his feed bag. He gave a shout. "Halloo!" he cried. "Look here! See what I have here, brothers in Jacob! Come hither, all of you!" They come up from all sides, stretch their necks, and look. Right at the top of the feed bag, Issachar had found his 10 silver rings, the price of his load of corn. They stand and are amazed. They shake their heads and make signs to ward off evil. "Well, bony one," they cry, "what has happened to you?" Suddenly they rush each to his own bag. Each one looks and needs not to search. At the top of each man's bag lies his purchase money. They sit down where they are on the ground. What does it mean? The money had been fairly counted out against the weights. Now they have it back again. Their hearts sink under the sheer incomprehensibility of it. What in all the world could it mean? Certainly it is good, it makes the face light up to get one's money back along with the goods, but yet it was uncanny, particularly because they were under suspicion as it was. There was the mutual good feeling, that in itself was suspicious, and cast a distorted light in both directions. It still remained warming and satisfying, but again there was a screw loose somewhere. For why, oh why, had God done this? "Do you know why God does this to us?" asked Big Reuben, and nodded at them with the muscles of his face all drawn. They understood well what he meant. He referred to the old story, and connected this crazy good luck with the crazy bad luck in which they were involved. Because once, against his warning, if he had actually warned them, they had laid hands on the boy. That they brought God into the thing, asking each other why he did this, showed that they had the same thoughts. But thinking of it, they felt, was going far enough. Reuben need not wag his head at them. Now that this had happened, it would be harder than ever to stand before the Father. It gave them still another confession to make. Simeon, Benjamin, and now this queer, this altogether crazy business into the bargain. No, they were not exactly going home with their heads high. Perhaps it might please Jacob to hear that they had got the corn gratis. On the other hand, his business honor might be touched, and more than ever they should stand in a bad light before him. Once they all jumped up at the same time to run to their asses and return the purchase price. But then they all saw the futility of that and sat down again. No sense in that, they said. And truly there was as little sense in returning the money as there was in their having it back in the first place. They shook their heads. They even kept on shaking their heads in their sleep, often several at a time. And they sighed, too, as they slept. Probably not one of them but unconsciously heaved a sigh twice or thrice in the night. Yet anon, a smile would play on the lips of this or that sleeper. Yes, several of them smiled happily in their sleep. The Missing Number. Good news! The return of his sons was announced to Jacob, and their approach towards the paternal tent, with their asses moving heavily under the burden of Mizraim's corn. At first it was not noticed that there were only 9 of them, instead of the 10 who had gone forth. 9 makes a sizable group, and with all their animals, 9 was almost like 10 to the eye. Only a very sharp eye will notice that it is not one more. Benjamin, standing with his father before the house of Hare, the old man had him by the hand, the husband of Mahalia and Arbuth just like a little lad, did not notice anything wrong. He saw neither 9 nor 10, just the brothers, moving up in their goodly numbers. But Jacob saw at once. Astonishing. After all, the patriarch was close to 90. One would not expect keenness of vision from those brown eyes, faded and blinking from age, with the flabby sacks beneath them. For unimportant things, and how much has not become unimportant, they were not keen. But the deficiencies of age are more mental than physical. The senses have seen and heard and felt enough. Let them grow dull. But there are things for which they can surprisingly regain the keen ear of the hunter, the quick eye of the sheep-counting shepherd. And the integrality of Israel was a subject on which Jacob saw better than anybody else. "There are only 9, he said in a decisive, though somewhat quavering tone, and pointed. After a very brief space, he added, "Simeon is not there."
"Yes, Simeon is missing," replied Benjamin after a careful look. "I don't see him either. He must be coming after them."
"We will hope so," said the old man very firmly, and clasped the hand of his youngest in his. Thus he let them come up. He did not smile. He said not a word of greeting. He only asked, "Where is Simeon?" There they had it. Obviously he was minded, as before, to make things as hard as he could for them.
"Of Simeon later," answered Judah. "Greeting, father! Of him presently. For the moment only this much, that you have no cause for worry about him. Look, we are back from our journey, and once more with the head of our house."
"But not all," said he immovably. "To you too, greetings, but where is Simeon?"
"Well, yes, he is missing for the moment," they told him. "He is not here just now. That is because of the business we did, and the way the man down there..."
"Perhaps you have sold my son for bread?"
"Of course not. But we bring corn, as our Lord sees. Plenty of corn. At least plenty for a while, and very good quality. Wheat and prime barley from Lower Egypt, and you will have your little white loaves for the offerings. That is the first thing we have to tell you."
"And the second?"
"The second may sound somewhat strange. One might even say more than strange. If you like, even abnormal. But we did think it would please you. We have all this good corn for nothing. That is, it was not for nothing at first. We paid for it, and our money faithfully balanced the weights of the land. But when we camped the first night, Issachar found his money in his feed bag, and lo and behold, we all found ours too, so that we are bringing home the goods and the money too, for which we count on your approval."
"But my son Simeon you do not bring home. It is as good as settled that you have traded him for common bread."
"Again! What can our dear Lord be thinking of? We are not the men for that kind of trade. Shall we sit down here with you and reassure you about your son, our brother? But first, shall we let a little golden grain run into your hand, and show you the money we brought back, that you may see how gold and silver are present both at once?"
"What I desire, first of all, is to be informed about my son Simeon," he said. They sat down in a circle with him and Benjamin, and made their report, how they had been segregated on the frontier and sent to Mempi, a great noisy, bustling city, how they were led through rows of crouching men-beasts to the great official palace, and into a room of overwhelming splendor, and before the seat of the great lord who was as Pharaoh, and was the keeper of the market to whom all the world came for bread. He was a strange kind of man, spoiled by greatness, erratic, and charming. They had bowed and bent before the man, Pharaoh's friend, the provider, and thought to deal with him in the way of business. But he showed a double face, both friendly and grim. In part, he spoke them very friendly. In part, and suddenly, very harsh. He had asserted what they could scarcely bear to repeat, namely that they were spies who wanted to search out the secret shame of the land. They, the 10 true men. Their hearts had misgiven them. They had told him precisely who they were, 10 men dealing in truth, all of them sons of one man, the friend of God in the land of Canaan, and in their full number not 10 but 12, since the youngest was at home with the father, and one had been lost in the world at an early age. But the man there,
the lord of the land, did not and would not believe that their father was still alive, seeing that they themselves were no longer of the youngest. He had to be told twice, for in the land of Egypt they probably knew no such length of days as our dear lord owns. They probably die off early of their ape-like excesses.
Enough, he said. Where is my son Simeon?
They were just coming to that, they said, or at least without long delay. But first, for good or ill, they must speak of somebody else, and it was a pity he had not gone with them in the first place, as they had wished and suggested. If he had, they would probably all be back again in full numbers by now, for then the proof would have been forthcoming, which the man, not trusting them, had required. For he had never given up the notion that they were spies, or believed their solemn word as to their honorable origins, but had demanded as proof of their innocence that they send the youngest born of them all before his seat. If they did not, then, he had said, they were proven spies. Benjamin laughed. Lead me to him, he said. I am curious to see this curious man.
You will be silent, Benoni, Jacob sternly admonished him, and cease your childish prattle. Does an urchin like you mix in such councils as these? I have still to hear about my son Simeon.
Yes, said they. You would hear if you would listen, dear father, and did not expect us to tell you all the details at once. It had been clear that, lying under such a suspicion and enforced by such a demand, they would not have been allowed to leave, to say nothing of buying bread. There had to be a guarantee. The man had first proposed to keep them all, and only send one to bring back the evidence. But by skillful talk and persuasion, they succeeded in changing his mind, so that he only kept one, Simeon, and let the rest of them leave, provided with grain.
And so your brother, my son Simeon, has been sold for debt into the Egyptian house of bondage, said Jacob, with terrifying self-control.
The steward of the lord of the land, they answered, a good, steady-going man, had assured them that Simeon would be well treated, everything considered, and that his bonds would soon be loosed.
Better and better, he said, do I understand why I was loath to give you leave for the journey. You keep forever at me with your itch to go down to Egypt, and when I finally consent, you make such use of my weakness that only some of you come back, leaving the best of you in the clutch of the oppressor.
You did not always speak so well of Simeon.
Lord of heaven, he said with face upraised, they accuse me of having no heart for Leah's second, the warlike hero. They act as though it was I had sold him away for a measure of meal and given him to the jaws of Leviathan for food for their children. I, not they. How must I thank thee that thou hast at least strengthened my heart against their assault, and kept me firm against their naughtiness when they wanted to go in their full numbers, taking the youngest as well. They would have been quite capable of coming back without him, and telling me you did not set any great store by him.
On the contrary, father, if all 11 of us had gone, and the youngest had been with us, so that we could have set him before the man, the lord of the land, who required his presence, then we should all have come back together. But there is nothing lost, for we need only take Benjamin down and set him before the man, Pharaoh's keeper of the market, there in the hall of the provider, and Simeon will be free, and you will have them both back again, your hero and your child.
In other words, since you have squandered away Simeon, you want to tear Benjamin out of my arms and take him to where Simeon is?
We want that because of the man's whim, to cleanse ourselves, and with the proof redeem the pledge.
You hearts of wolves, you rob me of my children, and all your thought is how to decimate Israel. Joseph is no more, Simeon is no more, and now you would take Benjamin away. As you have brewed, so I must drink, and everything goes on over my head.
No, you describe it not as it is, father and lord. Benjamin is not to be given up in addition to Simeon. Rather, both shall come back to you, if only we first set our youngest before the man's eyes, that he may see we go about with truth. We humbly beg you to give us Benjamin for the journey, that we may free Simeon, and Israel may be once more his full number as of yore.
Full number? And where is Joseph? In plain words, you demand from me that I shall send this last remaining one to join his brother Joseph. Well, you are refused.
Then Reuben, the oldest brother, grew hot and gushed forth like boiling water, and said, Father, hear me now. Listen to me alone, who am the head of all this. For not to them shall you give the boy for the journey, but only to me. If I do not bring him back, then may it happen to me thus and thus. If I do not bring him back, then shall you strangle my two sons, Hanok and Palu. Strangle them, I say, before my eyes with your own hands, and I will not stir an eyelash if I broke my word to you and did not free the pledge.
Yes, yes, there you go, headlong like a waterfall, Jacob answered. Where were you when the swine trod down my lovely son? Did you know how to protect Joseph? What should I have from your sons? And am I an avenging angel to strangle them and decimate Israel with my own hands? I reject you all and your demand. My son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead, and he alone remains to me. If aught happened to him on the way, then the world would see the sight of my gray hairs brought down in sorrow to the grave.
They looked at each other and compressed their lips. It was wonderful the way he called Benjamin my son, and not their brother, and said that he alone was left to him. And Simeon, your hero? They asked. He answered,
I will sit here alone and mourn for him. Disperse.
Our duty and thanks to you, said they, and left him. Benjamin went with them and patted the arm of one or two of the brothers with his short-fingered hand. Don't be annoyed, he begged, and be not bitter that he stands on his dignity. Do you think it flatters me to be called his only son, or that I brag because he said I am all that is left him, and he refuses to let me go with you? I always know he never forgets how Rachel died to give me my life. And this tutelage I suffer under, he practices in bitterness. Think how long it took for him to let you go down without me, and see how dear you are to him. Now it will only take a little time till he will yield and send me down with you to the land, for he will not leave our brother in the hands of the heathen. He cannot. And besides, how long will the bread last which you were so clever as to get for nothing? So be of good cheer. The little one will have his journey yet. But now, tell me a bit more about this keeper of the market, the stern lord who accused you so outrageously and asked such outlandish questions about the youngest of the family. I might almost boast about that, that he wants to see me at all and use me for a witness. Tell me about him. The highest, you said, among all those lower than the highest, and lifted up above all? How did he look to you? How does he speak? It is no wonder I am curious about a man who is so curious about me.